This episode features depictions of violence, death, and language that some listeners may find offensive, as well as discussions of suicide, murder. Listener's discretion is advised, especially for children under 13. There are times in our lives where we joke or tell something about someone or a situation that unintentionally takes a life of its own. Well, if it is something very positive and that has happened, then there's no issues. Now, is it? But then, what if it is something more sinister, more dark, more intense, more deep, more hurtful, more remorseful, that often makes us wonder that if life is imitating art? Now, this is the story that we are talking about, which is a very good example of how life has imitated art. This is the story of author Lewis Duncan. Hello to all the insomniacs and all those people who just tuned in to fall asleep, rest of the victims whom I may have literally forcibly pushed to listen, and welcome to my dear new listeners who happen to accidentally click on my podcast. Welcome all, welcome to Crime with K. So you made it past that initial warning, huh? Consider yourself brave, do you? Then brace on for this true crime ride. In October of 1997, author Lewis Duncan Arquett sat in a dark theater as the film adaptation of her 1973 book I Know What You Did Last Summer began unspooling for an unsuspecting audience. While the crowd ate up the modernized throwback to 80s slasher flicks kicked off by its predecessor, Scream, the previous year from I Know, screenwriter Kevin Williamson, Duncan was somewhat horrified by all but unrecognizable version of her story. Sure, there was a character named Julie James at the center of it, and her friends began receiving ominous warnings stating, "I know what you did last summer." But that's basically where the similarities end. In the book version, Julie and her friends accidentally hit and kill a 10-year-old boy on his bike, and the impending story was always intended to be emotional morality tale. In the movie, the group hit a man on the road and toss his body into the lake, leaving him for dead. When he was still alive, he comes back for revenge in the form of faceless, hook-handed killer. But it wasn't so much the changes to the source material that bothered the creator. In actuality, she had suffered such a terrible loss in her personal life that it was hard to see these young people being murdered up on screen and not think of what happened in her reality. On July 16, 1989, Duncan's youngest daughter, Caitlin Arquette, was shot to death coming home from a friend's house in Albuquerque, New Mexico, in what police believed was a random drive-by shooting. However, the more Duncan delved into trying to make sense of the tragedy, the more she believed there was something far more sinister to the crime than it just being a coincidental random act of violence. It was approximately 11 p.m. that Sunday night as Caitlin headed south on 19th Street and prepared to make a left on Lomas Boulevard just past the rail track roads. It was lightly raining when two shots entered the passenger's side, striking her left temple and cheek. The car spun out of control and she landed in front of a wooden telephone pole some 700 feet from the actual shooting. She was rushed to the hospital in a coma. Later that day, she was pronounced brain dead and taken off her respirator. Caitlin had just completed high school and moved into her first studio apartment. She had a serious relationship with her boyfriend, Dung Nguyen, a Vietnamese immigrant who had met her a year and a half prior, who was seemingly a good guy that Arquette family all took an immediate liking to. On the day of the murder, the couple had another argument, and that evening, Nguyen was out drinking with a few friends at a bar. They dropped him off at her apartment, but she never came home. Detectives tested his hands for gunpowder residue, which came back negative, and also found a letter from Kate Dung apologizing for their earlier argument. 5 days later, after Kate's death, Dung had attempted suicide by stabbing himself in the stomach with a 4-inch folding knife. When detective questioned him in the hospital, he was racked with guilt over her death, saying if he had not gotten into an argument with her, she would not have been in that area of the town or alone. When Louis went to visit him, he thanked her for coming and told her, "I didn't like her." She replied that she knew he didn't, but that if he knew who did, he needed to decide whether he loved Kate enough to tell them who did. Louis recalled his replay as, "I know, I'm deciding." When the police questioned him after his recovery, he had nothing more to say. And when Louis examined the makeup letter from the day of her death, she immediately recognized that the handwriting did not match Caitlin's. Interestingly enough, Dung had also been leading somewhat of a double life. Rumor had it he had participated in a series of insurance fraud schemes orchestrated by Vietnamese crime ring in Southern California. This was a huge operation in which car accidents would be staged and all parties involved would pursue large settlements afterwards. Could his criminal past have had anything to do with Kate's death? Despite skepticism, Louis employed the help of psychic detectives since the police weren't coming up with any solid leads. After meeting with one, she had sent out artifacts from Kate's life to several more psychics with the hope they would come back with some sort of useful information. The strangest incident to come of these interactions was from psychic Noreen Reiner, who was able to come up with a police sketch of the supposed shooter. The man in the picture looks exactly like a character that Louis had created for her, as yet to be released book Don't Look Behind You. The similarities were eerie. The character in the book was a hitman named Mike Vamp, who drove Camaro and targeted the main female character of the story, whom Duncan had based on her daughter, Kate. Around this time, the Albuquerque Police Department had arrested and charged two men with murder of Caitlin Arquette. They were Junil Jew Escobedo, who drove a Camaro, and Miguel Garcia, whom friends called Mike or sometimes by his nickname Vamp. These arrests were based on the testimony of a friend of the pair that claimed he was in the backseat of the car when the murder took place. But almost immediately the narrative fell apart. The revolver the police found and assumed was murder weapon was missing a bushing and a spring and was completely inoperable and had been since months before murder. Charges were dismissed. none of the strange details surrounding the case were making any sense. So Lewis penned a new book, Who Killed My Daughter, which was published in 1992, and she immediately went on a media tour, appearing on shows for Larry King Live and Sally Just Raphael, hoping that someone out there would have insight into what really happened. One person that took note was private investigator Pat Caristo, who took on the case and went back to the very beginning, to the start, from the scratch. The new investigator almost immediately discovered a new suspect. It turned out a plainclothes detective was on the scene, as well as a police officer that had initially passed the crime scene after having seen two cars and thinking it was an automobile accident. He turned around to find only one automobile and Kate slumped over in her seat. A witness recalled seeing a Volkswagen Bug speed away from the crime scene. The detective found a man standing by the car and got a statement. That man was Paul Apodaca, who had a long criminal history for violence against women. He also owned a Volkswagen Bug. Basically, standard police procedure wasn't followed. Otherwise, the police on the scene would have run Apodaca's name through their system and seen his rap sheet come up. Also, crucial evidence was missing. No bullets or shells were ever found on the crime scene. Initial analysis implied a small caliber gun was used, yet the hole in the driver's side door appeared to come from something much larger, like a .38. Was the mishandling of the crime scene cover up due to the embarrassment of incompetence? So what really happened? Did Kathleen find out something she wasn't supposed to regarding her boyfriend ties to the Vietnamese in charge of the staged insurance scams? Was it a random act of violence? Did criminal on the scene with the long list of violence towards women have anything to do with it? Or is the identity of the killer forever clouded in the mishandling of evidence from inexperienced police at the time? Sadly, Duncan never got the answers she sought after for the later half of her life. On June 15, 2016, Lewis Duncan passed away at her home in South Sarasota at the age of 82. Although the murder of Carolyn Arquest still remains unsolved, even after three whole decades, the case raises more questions than answers, leaving us think, does really life imitate art? Sadly, Lewis and her husband both never got the closure for which they fought later part of their life. This case still remains unsolved and just makes us wonder if life really has a purpose, or even just makes us think that can our unintentional thoughts really become reality. Until next time, keep listening to Crime with Kay, and remember not to pop up as an episode on my podcast.